Is there a secret message from the stars? We'll be back with Ken Klein in a moment. Next hour, we'll take phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Ken, was there a message in the stars as it relates to the Great Pyramid?
I'm sorry, could you ask me that again?
Sure. Was there a message in the stars as it ties into the Great Pyramid?
Well, the message is from the stars. The message from the stars is the second film I produce that I hope we can make available on the program tonight. But before we go there, can I just finish up on the mastaba thing? Because I don't think we quite finished that.
Okay.
There were mastabas. You know, we said that the pyramids, they never found a mummy inside any of the pyramids, including the Great Pyramid. Mastabas were built outside the pyramids, and these were the places where, allegedly, the pharaohs were buried. They never found pharaohs in any of those either, but most likely that was because when the pharaohs were buried there, they buried them with great wealth and all kinds of things, and they were probably raided. All of them were raided by tomb robbers. But the point of it is why was there a need for two tombs? Why would there be a need for a pyramid tomb and a mastaba tomb? Would the pharaohs need a getaway house to go to? No. The pharaohs never would have been buried in the pyramids because they represented something holy, and that was a sacrament just building them. So they were buried outside. And their bodies were never found, or mummies were never found, because they were probably raided by tomb robbers. So, the idea of a mastaba as a second place for the pharaohs is ludicrous. They were never buried inside the pyramids. And when you look, you know, in this film, The Message from the Stars, this new film that we have out now, what we do, George, is we actually in computer graphics. You know, we go through a lot of history, but then we have these computer graphics that reverse engineer the Great Pyramid. So we take you back in time to when the pyramid was like half built,
mm-hmm.
and we actually fly you in. We'll fly you in to the King's Chamber first. That's where we take you first. And in the King's Chamber, the first thing we talk about there is this empty coffer that they say the pharaoh was buried in. But when you look at the coffer, it's really interesting because there's no markings on it. And all the coffers, all the funerary boxes that they put the mummies in had this extensive writing on it describing who the person was and his family and his friends.
Sure.
On this one, there's nothing. There's not a thing. And then we show you that this coffer actually had to be dropped in from above. It couldn't have come up through the passageways because it was bigger than the passageways. So it had to be dropped in from above. Now, this was totally different than any of the funerary practices and any of the burial procedures of the Egyptians, because the mummy was always carried in the funerary box to the place where they were burying it, and it was always buried in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But this box is 150 feet above the ground, couldn't have been brought through the passageways. It had to be dropped in from above. So the very idea of this funerary box is really the central theme of the pyramid. And it was enclosed by just red granite, which was totally different than any other pyramid in all of Egypt.
And it's a perfect fit, too, isn't it? If it were dropped in from above, it fits like a glove?
No. The King's Chamber is about 20 feet long, 20 feet wide, and about 30 feet long. So the funerary box is maybe 7 feet long and about 3 feet wide.
I mean, but how does it sit in there?
It sits, well, in the film you see exactly how it sits in there. It just was dropped in, and, you know, it's at the west end of the King's Chamber, and you enter in from the east end.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's across the room from you, and it was empty. And the reason that they went to such a great lengths to preserve the integrity of this room was because that funerary box represented something that happened that had never happened before in all of history. And that is that this guy Enoch, who was the calendar man, who studied the movement of the stars in the Grand Gallery, when we take you into the Grand Gallery and show you how all that's done through computer graphics, figured out, you know, the movements of the celestials because he was trained by messengers, angels. And when he was done with his work and he had calculated all these things and they sealed up this pyramid, and they had to seal it in a specific way, and we show you how they sealed it up from the inside. He was taken off the earth. He was taken. He never died. And so that empty box represents a man who achieved immortality. Now, when Al-Mamun went in there and broke in, you know, like in the 7th or 8th century, He found nothing in the box. He thought, you know, there was gold and stuff in there. But he missed the real riches, because what could be more valuable to any of us on this planet than to attain to eternal life or immortality? And so they memorialized this event in this pyramid. And all the other pyramids in Egypt were the duplication to keep in the minds of the people this event, but it was lost. The whole concept of it was lost, and now it's being restored to us. So when Enoch was taken, it says that right in Genesis, it says Enoch was taken. He was a righteous man, probably the only righteous man at that time, and he was taken. He achieved some kind of mind circuitry that was so superior to anybody else that he attained to the recognition that he could leave the planet without having to go through death. That is a trip. Man, that is so hard to wrap your mind around. But can you imagine if you lived during that time and you knew, because Enoch wasn't a guy that wasn't unknown. He was known.
Was he a human, Ken?
Yeah, he was a human. Enoch was a human being that was a righteous judge. In fact, you know, when you go into any of the papyrus stores, any of them, you go to any papyrus store anywhere in Egypt, there's one scene that you always see, and it's called The Last Judgment. You go, well, that's really interesting. And in that last judgment, you see this god Toth, who was Enoch, and he's standing in front of a scale with writing something down. And what he's writing is, what's going to be the result of this person's heart being weighed against a feather? And if the heart outweighs the feather, then this person doesn't pass go. He's not going to make it. But if the feather outweighs the heart or even balances the heart, then this person gets a pass. And so he's this righteous judge. And most people think that, you know, ancient Egypt was a polytheistic animalism type of religion, but it wasn't. It was monotheistic. And then over a period of time, it fell into this paganism. But actually, it was monotheistic at the beginning. And this guy, Toth, or Enoch, was a real person, and he escaped death.
Supposed to be a descendant of Adam, right?
Well, yeah.
Direct.
Enoch was a seventh generation from Adam, and he was in the line of Seth. You know, he was part of that lineage.
Right.
And he was a person that was an upright person that made sound judgments that people would go to for, you know, like a judge. And he always judged righteously. So the people knew him at that time. So can you imagine if I told you, George, you know, I'm coming down to Ventura Boulevard tomorrow, and, you know, about 12 noon, a ship's going to pick me up. I'm going to give you a big kiss goodbye, and I'm heading out.
I'm out of here. Goodbye.
What would that do to your head? Well, you would quit your show, and you'd go live on top of a mountaintop trying to figure out how you could, you know, attain to eternal life. Well, the people of that time were so stunned by that event. Can you imagine? And there's other precedents in the Bible. Elijah, for example, was taken off the earth in a fiery chariot.
Well, see, I wouldn't quit, though. I'd be broadcasting from the top of the mountain.
Yeah, you'd be there with Art, you know, in Nevada or somewhere, you know, broadcasting from, you know,
no,
outer space.
I'll stay in St. Louis and L.A., thank
But
you.
That's why the Egyptians were so taken by, you know, the next life. You know, that's why they were trying to figure out how they can achieve the same kind of result.
All right, but are you saying that Enoch was the architect of the pyramids?
Enoch was given instructions by messengers, and he was the architect of the Great Pyramid. And when you go into the antechamber, for example, there's a seal on the granite leaf. I show you this in the film. I mean, I do this amazing computer graphic stuff, fantastic. And there you see this granite leaf, and there on the granite leaf, on one of the sides of it, is this thing called the boss. And the boss is exactly 25 inches from the wall, and it's explaining what a cubit is. It's like a seal. It's like the person that finished the pyramid said, okay, here's my seal of approval. This proves that this wasn't done by anybody but angelic intelligence that was given to Enoch, who then was the architect of this amazing edifice that is one of the wonders of the world. And then he left, and he left in a ship.
Okay, so you're saying some kind of craft came down and picked him up?
Absolutely, okay. Because we find in different places in the Bible, for example, in 1 Chronicles 28:18, David's talking to his son Solomon. He says, "Now make sure, you know, when you make the stuff for the inner portions of the holy temple, that you make a model or a copy of the chariots of the cherubim." So, angels fly in ships, and this is like revolutionary thinking, because nobody in the modern era believes that, you know, angels fly in ships. But, you know, in the 1890s, okay, There were two guys that came along that really caused a paradigm shift in the way people conceptualized about ships, flying saucers, or UFOs, because they were pretty much accepted as benevolent, expressions of God's proxies to the earth. And you see it in all kinds of paintings, and they're in my film, by the way. And in 1890, there was this guy named Schiaparelli, who was an astronomer who was looking at the Mars, and he saw these canals up there, or what he thought they were. He called them canali, but that just means, you know, these normal geological formations. Well, it was translated into English as canal, so right away everybody thought that there was life on Mars, you know, and then came, this guy that wrote War of the Worlds. What was his name?
H.G.?
Yeah, H.G. Wells, and then he wrote this about this invasion of London by Martians, and then of course Orson Welles talked about this on Halloween night in the 30s, and man, it created a panic, and people thought we were being invaded by Martians, and all of a sudden this whole idea of alien life becomes sinister and evil. But that's only been over the last 100 years. Before that, the world believed that there was these crafts that came that were kind and benevolent, and it's in the artwork all over the world. And yet, over the last 100 years, this paradigm shift is what pervades people's, consciousness, and what they've come to believe is anything that's out of this world's got to be evil.
But you believe that indeed Enoch, being the seventh descendant from Adam, was a human. He didn't come down from above. He only went up there.
That's right. He didn't come down from above. He, in the sense that, he came from outer space, but he was a descendant. He came from the gnomes of the lineage of Adam. So he was born as a human.
All right, those who took him, where did he go?
Well, the pyramid actually tells us that. And when I take you inside, this flight through the inner corridors
of
the pyramid.
All right, and you're still doing that for us,
yeah,
so go ahead.
Inside the king's chamber, there's these things called these air ducts, but they're really not air ducts. There was no need for air in there.
No.
There was, not going to be any humans in there. Why the need for air? Well, actually point these channels that we actually fly you through them into, and where they point to, the south duct, if I can call it that, points to a place called Drago. Okay, Drago is a star cluster, and Drago is the dragon star.
That's where the reptilians come from, don't they?
The dragon star was a place that is talked about in Revelation 12. It says there was the great dragon swept away a third of the stars of heaven. The stars are representations of angels. So there was actually a time, if you can call it that, before the foundation of this world, and this mystery's been hidden since the foundation of the world, and that's what my job is on this planet, is to make known the mystery, that there was actually war in the heavens, in the physical universe, not the heaven of heavens where God dwells, but in the physical universal construction, which has got, like I said, 900 billion galaxies. But in our galaxy, there was a war, and George Lucas was right. There was a Star Wars, and the result of that war, and there's a lot to be said about that war, and I'm going to be doing daily video podcasts on my website to teach people and help them understand what's really happening. So anybody that wants to come, it's all free. Just come. It's my job to make this known
all right.
to the world.
But, I like that.
But those stars fell, okay? And so the evil, which we call sin, which is basically, a religious word that explains the breaking of universal law, actually happened outside of this world and came into this world. And it's caused our downfall as human beings. It's caused our demise.
Is that why we're the prison planet?
That's why we're the prison planet. And it's too expensive to talk about it on this broadcast. But, the pyramid explains to us that our calling in this world is to transcend our gnomes, our genetics, and overcome our lower nature, our animal nature, because we're born with a nature like animals. We have to overcome that. And this life is about overcoming our animal self and entering into our higher self, which is connected with God. And then the other shaft, which I show you in this film, points to the Belt of Orion. And I believe that initially that Enoch was taken into that star region. And then he was transported to Arcturus. That's what I believe. Arcturus is mentioned.
And do you think he's doing the same thing now?
Well, I'm not going to get into this on this program. I'm going to reserve that for later because that gets into some areas that I'm not free to talk about right now.
All right, but you do believe he's still around.
Well, it says that he's mentioned in the New Testament that he will return with 10,000 saints. Now, these books that you're reading about, you know, you've been left behind to sell 50 million copies.
I know, incredible, isn't it?
Incredible. The people talk about this rapture, that they're just going to fly out into heaven. Well, it says that God will send forth his angels in ships, doesn't say it in ships, but he sends forth his angels, and I believe that these that are coming will come with Enoch.
Well, and they say Enoch is now an angel. Some people say that.
Well, yeah, I know some people say that. That's a whole other topic.
Metatron or something like that? Is that his name?
Well, he's Enoch.
His angelic
name. He will come in 10,000 in ships, as the angels will gather the elect from the four winds and ships.
Are there any inscriptions at all on the Great Pyramid that would show some of this?
There's nothing on the Great Pyramid because it's all encrypted in the stone. It's all in the stonework. It's not written on. There's no hieroglyphics in the Great Pyramid.
It's not an obvious message.
When you read the Book of the Dead, which is called the Book of the Eternal Day,
right. And the Tibetans have their own, right?
In the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which is really called the Book of the Eternal Day, metaphorically, it's mentioned there about these stations within the Great Pyramid that lead you to higher revelations. The Grand Gallery, which the traditionalists and that maintain they try to maintain the integrity of the historical tomb theory, can't explain the Grand Gallery and its connectivity to the Great Pyramid as a feature of a tomb, because the Grand Gallery was actually an observatory in which they would watch the moon track over the top slot, because at the top of the Grand Gallery is only about 4 feet, so they could track the moon and how it moved across the heavens. And they can track its, movement, so they can figure out the amount of time in a year. And that place was an initiation place where people were taught the mysteries of the universe, this Enochian priesthood. Well, I'll get into that in my, daily podcast, and I'll teach people about the Enochian priesthood and what they knew.
Ken, it's fascinating.
Of course, because the Great Pyramid is a monument that memorializes this event where somebody escaped death. And only two people in the Bible ever did that. One was Enoch, the other was Elijah. Jesus, of course, died, but
he had to die.
Again.
Yeah, exactly.
So what this is telling us is there's life from above. They traveled in ships. They're trying to rescue us. They're trying to help us wake up from our spiritual stupor and tell us where we came from.
You don't think there's a deception going on
by
them?
Well, there's a lot of deception going on because there's fallen forces, because when Satan swept away a third, two-thirds of that third, because there in the Bible we have the cherubim angels, they were watchers, watch over, and they only allow certain amounts of evil to affect us. Then there's the scribe angels called the seraphim angels, they're the record keepers, and then there was a third group of angels called the Ophanim, and they're mentioned in Ezekiel 1 and 10. And these are the wheel angels, and we're related to the wheel angels.
The wheel angels to me sound like craft, don't
they? No, they're not craft. They're not craft. The wheels within the wheels relate to our identity.
All right, stay with us, Ken. This show's going by too fast. Incredible. We'll be back. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls. Back in a moment with Ken Klein. His website, kenkleinproductions.net. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Well, Kenny, they're calling for you already, but that's an hour away. Your theories, how did you get to where you are with them? How'd that happen?
There's a lot of things I'm afraid to talk about on this show.
What do you mean, afraid? Why?
Well, there's something going on now on this earth that has never happened before, and a lot of the mysteries that even the Bible doesn't bring a heck of a lot of light to are going to come to light. And I don't understand why I don't consider myself to be anything other than just a regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow I've been given knowledge of things that isn't extra biblical. It's in the Bible, but been hidden, and it's coming. It's opening now, and things are coming clear that have never come clear before. Like you mentioned, for example, you know, these wheels within the wheels. Well, people have speculated on this mysterious language in the book of Ezekiel forever. And some say, oh, these are flying saucers. They're not flying saucers. This is explaining a group of angels called the Ophanim. The word Ophan means wheel. And these are the ones that were swept away by Lucifer. And two-thirds of them became demonic powers of deception in this world. And they pray. And they are able to take language and concoct codes against you to deceive your mind. It's a terrible dilemma that human beings are in, because unless you're grounded,
right,
unless you're really grounded to the truth, you could easily be taken off. And that happened to me for many, many years when I was trying to find my way, you know, after that event. I mean, I knocked on a lot of doors and gotten myself in a lot of trouble, had a lot of mental diseases. And if it weren't for Christ, I would be a nutcase. But over many, many years, you know, and running into people that were very humble and don't want to be known, I've been taught, trained, and prepared for this time to bring to the world the true knowledge of particularly this issue about the Great Pyramid. But even beyond that, you know, there's so much more that the world needs to know, and it's coming. We're going to see, George, proliferation is beginning to happen. I see it on TV all the time. That was one on last night about UFOs, and people are coming forward, and there's been a lot of suppression of knowledge.
Sure.
By the governments of the world, and in disciplines of, like, education have kept, look what's happening in Egypt with the knowledge of the pyramids. It's been kept down, and these are the wardens that control a lot of our thought life, and all that's going to be overcome.
The world
is being prepared. People of the world, and the year 2012 to me is a joke. We're going to be here a lot longer than that, and because we have a long journey to prepare for what our destiny is as a race, the human race. We're all brothers and sisters, whether you're a Jew or a Gentile or a Muslim or a Christian. Every person on this planet we're related to. We are family, and this family, this Earth family, has got to transcend our cultures. We have to transcend our genetics. We have to transcend our religious biases and be healed. We're sick. We're in a prison, and we're blind and naked, and we can't see. And there's something that's going to happen. It's going to sweep the world. It might take 100 years for it to happen. I don't know. But that our destiny is to travel into space.
What if we were genetically made, though, Ken, to be what you just said, the victims of the prison planet, that we're constantly full of hate and war and just all these things? What if it's just in us?
It is in us. And the problem started when we were... See, this is the big conundrum. This is what the Christian world doesn't understand. This is why the Egyptians, you know, mummified people and took out their remains. They didn't want to have any opportunity for the spirit to come back into human flesh, because they knew that they wanted to get out of here. They knew that you know, they eviscerated the body and put them in jars, put the vital organs in jars, because they didn't want the spirit of that person to come back, the spirit of that being to come back into that human body. They didn't want reincarnation. They're trying to prevent it, and that's what mummification was all about. And we've never understood that. Well, if you go back into the Bible, you'll find that in the book of Job and places throughout the Bible that we pre-existed our humanness. You know, that's what the Christian world
sure
believe. It says, to whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to his image. There was a foreknowledge of God of us. And we were the angels that warred. We were the angels that warred, and that's forbidden in the heavens. And because of that, we were cast into flesh. And then it was complicated by Eve's transgression when she went into the West Garden and ate from a tree that sickened her genetics. And that complicated the predicament. And that's why the Father had to come down here to rescue us and redeem us in the person of Jesus. He is our Father, and he had to come into this world to salvage us.
All right, now bring this back to the pyramid.
Well, I will, but let me finish what I was saying. And so we were an ancient beings that had to come to this world and live out a prison term and ended in death. And that's not the natural order of God's progression. He's eternal. We're eternal. But we have to go through this sentence of death on us in a prison planet, shackled in, you know, emotions and limited mind circuitries. And that's what the pyramid is all about. It's showing us where we came from. We came from a war in heaven. We're here on earth, and we have to transcend. That's what the pyramid, the inner structure of the pyramid is a metaphor, the inner let me call it transcension from human consciousness to divine consciousness, and where we're going. We're going to travel the stars. The prophets predicted it. In Isaiah, it says, "Have not I called you that I might not plant the heavens?" Not heaven, the heavens. That's a reference to the universe. So we're in preparation, and we've been under preparation for thousands of years to travel into space.
Well, is the pyramid a symbol or a workable structure?
Well, it's both. It was a workable structure because it was utilized for observing the stars. It had a metaphoric meaning in the empty coffer, and it has a symbolic meaning as well. And it has it also serves as a, in my next film, which is be called Gateway to the Galaxy. See, all these, this is a progression.
It is. It's like Star Wars,
yes,
that it has this.
It's totally spiritual, and it's awesome, and it's just exciting and fun. I hope people get this second film, A Message from the Stars, because it is a tremendous, educational device and a fun trip.
How long do they run?
They're an hour each.
Okay.
You know, if you haven't got the first one, you should get it. If you got the first one, I'm sure you've been waiting for the second one. You need to get it. And, I know a lot of people buy it off the web. A lot of people also call my 800 number.
Which is?
My 800 number is 1-800-892-9007. And if you can't get through, because I'm sure a lot of people will call, just keep trying.
Sure. Some people don't have computers, Ken.
Yeah, I know. I'll give it out again. 1-800-892-9007. I'm sure you'll help me again, George, later in the show.
Sure. I have been, since I was a kid, fascinated by the pyramids, and I always had this belief system that they were constructed with knowledge that we just didn't have on this planet, that it was given to us, that we were helped, that they somehow came down and physically moved these blocks for us. And I was laughed at when I was a kid, Ken, and I have no idea where I started thinking about this at an age of, let's say, 10 years old. What would make a 10-year-old think like that?
Well, every one of us has within ourselves an ancient memory, and we can't access it very well. And sometimes it comes out at night in dreams, but there's an ancient memory where we can actually know all things within us, but we don't know how to go there and get it. Sometimes it seeps out into our conscious mind, and you were just the person that picked up on some of those thought waves that are in everybody. Almost everybody I talk to is mystified and interested in the Great Pyramid. Now, the other pyramids, I think we could build them, but I don't believe it's possible that humans could build the Great Pyramid.
Right. I agree with you.
It's just too sophisticated. There's too much in it. There's too much science in it, geometry, astronomy. It's just too incredibly built. And when you start seeing all that stuff, you know that's just the outer sign of some incredible intelligence that was behind the building of it.
I would love to see a project done with just the mankind to see if they could construct that by itself. There's no way we could.
Well, the Japanese tried to make a third the size of it, and they couldn't pull it off. A third the size of it. I mean,
with manual labor, that kind of thing? Or
Try to do it. But, what's really amazing about the Great Pyramid is the passageways inside. There's no other pyramid that has interior passageways like this that create all kinds of an engineering problem.
Yeah.
So, these people were... The person, the knowledge that came from the angels or the messengers. By the way, I just got to say, we have this stereotypical idea of angels, but Jesus said, if my kingdom was of this world, my angels would fight, which means that in his kingdom, there's fighting going on.
There are warriors.
And there's still wars going on in the heavens. There's still powers of darkness and conflicts going on. So to get this idea that these are like these, you know, benevolent beings that just play harps is wrong. They're fierce and powerful and intelligent and mighty. And there's a family waiting for us up there, or wherever up is. I don't think there is an up.
There may not be.
But we have to get over these preconceived mind pictures that we've developed that are silly.
You know? But it is possible that when you try to interpret the Bible, that they came down, maybe in craft, to disrupt us, the fallen angels did, a long, long time ago.
Well, there are both types. You know, there's no doubt that there's evil ones and there's good ones. And
50-50?
Well, no, it's, you know, there's the two-thirds, the cherubim angels, I don't know how many there are, but, you know, Lucifer was able to sweep away a third of the stars.
What do you mean by sweep away?
Well, I mean, they followed him.
Okay,
you know,
okay, I see.
It's a symbolic language where he swept them away. In other words, they were swept up in his deception, and
okay.
They followed him, and there's billions of those. And I think that many of them are able to, there's things that say in the Bible, you know, don't let any impure word proceed out of your mouth. And you go, well, why, you know? Because that when your words go into the air, they're picked off. And then all kinds of mental prescriptions can be designed by these powers. They can be injected into your mind, and they're called noemas or fractional thought patterns. They have the power to do that. Unless you have the armor to ward off these things, you're just caught in the past. And people have mental disease comes from all these things, and people are confused and all kinds of vain speculations and wild imaginations. You know, that's where they come from. And we just don't even know how we're taken at times by these powers. And that's why you have to be grounded, because spiritual energy is like electricity without a ground. I mean, it's just wild. It flies everywhere. You have to be grounded properly. And that's my job, is to help people get grounded so they're not deceived.
Well, you're doing a good job with that, Ken.
I hope. I mean, I'm doing the best I can with the amount of light that has been given to me. That's what I do.
When you first started this, did you make mistakes? Was it a trial and error for you, a learning curve?
When you say this, are you talking about these films or my journey?
Yeah, the film and the journey.
Well, you know, I've been walking this path for 35 or 36 years, and I've made a lot of mistakes because, you know, we still live in a manwa, or this convolution where we see darkly, you know, and then as you continue on that path, you get, it's just like the best way to explain it is like, you know, the real reality of our existence comes, and how we behave the way we behave comes from mind pictures. We develop a mind picture, and then we do what the picture shows us. That's how, you know, language is converted into mind pictures. And the language is a terrible way to communicate, but that's what we have, and that's why there's so much problems in the world. But, you know, as you try to walk in the light, you know, you get more and more light on whatever you're, you know, focusing on, and then you develop more appropriate mind pictures. But you make a lot of mistakes because, you know, we see darkly because we live in a dark world, in a prison world. We have to climb. It's like climbing a mountain. You know, as you climb a mountain and you get close to the top, you see farther and better. And that's what it is when you walk this walk, you know, and hopefully you transcend to the degree where you can see clearly.
Do you think...
I'm beginning to see more clearly than ever as I get older and I continue on this pathway. So I've made a lot of mistakes. I'm not perfect, but I believe we're seeing things now more clearly than ever.
Do you think Enoch knew he was being picked up, or was he abducted?
He wasn't abducted. He had a specific amount of years that he lived, 365 years, the same number of days in a year. He lived 365 years. He knew exactly what was happening. He was instructed by the angels what would happen to him. He wasn't abducted. He willfully left, and he left with his eternal family. And in that, you know, he's coming again. He's coming back again. And he'll come with 10,000 saints. You know, all these people that think that that's about the, you know, the people, these raptured Christians that come back, that's not a raptured Christian. This is Enoch coming in ships.
If they come back, they're coming back where the pyramids are, aren't they?
They're coming back all over the earth.
All over the place.
All over the place.
Same time?
At the same time. And the people that go are the people that are sealed in their foreheads. And there's an anti-seal in the forehead called the Mark of the Beast. That's, I have written a book on that. It's on my website, too, but that's a whole other story, that there's an anti-mark and there's the right mark. There's a sealing in the forehead of those that are the elected ones to go.
Is it already there, that
no.
seal?
No.
How do we know what the right mark is and the wrong one is?
Because the recorders, the seraphim angels, are recording the events of our life, and it's also recorded inside of us. There's like a clicker system inside of us that records our life. So the event that makes the determination whether you receive a seal in your forehead or not all relates to whether you believe or not or accept or not that we are fallen and there had to be a redemption. There had to be a rescue mission. That rescue mission was Christ coming in the personification of Jesus. He's the personification of Christ. A lot of people think, well, you know, his name is Jesus Christ. No, it's not. Christ has to do with the anointing of God's Holy Spirit. And so Jesus is the personification of the Christ. He came to rescue us. All those that believe in the rescue mission and accept the terms for the marking are the elect. And that's what this is all about. And we haven't seen it except in traditional Christian terms, which really kind of are a turnoff, and they're so passe and cliched that we can't see it in the light that it was meant to and the magnitude of our salvation. It's enormous. We are going to travel the heavens, and we are going to be involved in establishing life forms in other places in the universe.
I like that, though, a rescue mission.
It's a rescue mission because we're in a prison. It's a Shawshank Redemption. It's one of my favorites.
When, though? When does this happen?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's going to be tomorrow. I mean, the Christians think it can happen any minute. I don't believe that. I don't think it can happen any minute. There's too much work that has to be done. There's too much training that has to take place. People have to get over their genetics.
Kenny, there are pyramids all over this planet. Are other ones like the Great Pyramid, or is that one standalone?
Well, there's differences, like the pyramids like down in Mexico,
yeah.
For example. You know, they might have been meant for good at one time, but they're used for human sacrifices. It's a
right.
lot different than the Great Pyramid. That was built for redemption. It was a sign. But, you know, all of those things, all of those pyramids and Stonehenge and all, that's a whole other discussion and a whole other film series we're going to do in the future. It does relate to Artesia. There is a relationship between all those and Artesia that I'm not free to go.
Did you ever touch Atlantis or look for Atlantis?
You know, I think that's a mythology that came from the flood, when the world was flooded,
right.
and then continents went underwater, and it kind of like warped into this idea that there was that's my view of it. I don't put much stock in an Atlantis. I think that those stories about Atlantis came when, you know, the earth was flooded. And it wasn't flooded the way, you know, it's presented, you know, today in traditional Christian doctrine, because for the earth world to be flooded to the top above the mountains, like Mount Everest, where did all the water go? I mean, it's ridiculous. There's no way that water just disappeared through evaporation. Not a chance. I mean, that'd be take seven oceans, more than we have now.
It would be a water world. Ken, stay with us. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be back with your phone calls right now on Coast to Coast AM.